Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom of Faith. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Hello, this is Leslie Gish. You're listening to the Gist of Freedom. You can log on to us at www.blackhistorydocumentaries.com. And tonight we have a wonderful guest. His name is Mr. Floyd Rounce. Are you on the line, Mr. Rounce?
Yes, I am.
Okay. How do you pronounce your name?
Oh, it's Floyd Rounce III.
Okay, great. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show on such a short notice. And you were so receptive to the interview, and you were kind to me when I met you at Martha's Vineyard. I just want to tell everybody at the top of the show that you are a wonderful person from my meeting you, at first glance. You were really nice to me.
I appreciate your comments, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Okay, let's start off about, let's talk about the film where we met, one of my favorites, all-time favorites, The Contradictions of Fairhope.
Right.
And talk about how you connected with them and the logistics of how that all came about. You had 25 films, so let's start there.
Okay, sure. Well, Miss Murkison, as I tend to call her, she reached out to us earlier in the year. I think she was possibly one of the first. She might have reached out to us sometime around February. And we actually did an event with her at Macy's, which was one of our sponsors this year. We did an event with her at Macy's 34th Street, Herald Square, on the 9th floor. And she was gracious enough to participate on the panel discussion that we had during Women's History Month, which, if I'm not mistaken, is March.
Right.
So we had the pleasure of working with her already, so we had kind of built up somewhat of a rapport. But she reached out to us regarding The Contradictions of Fairhope for submission, just like all the other filmmakers. So she was not taking the celebrity track at all. She just sent in her film with her submission fee and, took it from there.
Okay, what did you think about the film? And what
I thought she did a good job. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was her first time. I thought it was, I want to say, amazing and kind of astounding, considering the content and you saw it. I was unaware of Foot Wash, which takes place in Mississippi, if I'm not mistaken, and since
Alabama.
It was in Alabama, okay. It was in Alabama,
okay.
And unaware of it. I think that primarily folks from California and the immediate area, and also from up north like Detroit, Chicago, maybe possibly Ohio, those folks kind of migrated from Alabama, New Orleans, things of that nature. But most folks, and I think they mentioned it in the documentary, migrated north, so they went straight up to the northern cities, Chicago, Milwaukee, things of that nature.
Now, the place was packed. I mean, it was jam-packed.
Yes,
you had to keep
packed.
Adding chairs, and it was standing room. You had three layers of people standing around. I mean, what did you expect that type of response?
We did, and we were very pleased with the response, considering I know it rained that night, but everyone looked lovely. They all had on white. And we were very blessed on that evening, and, it all came together. And, in fact, you may not know this, but we also screened it simultaneously at the Performing Arts Center, which was our other venue, because I knew that there was going to be an overflow of crowd. So I didn't want too many people to be disappointed and turned away, so I also screened it at the Performing Arts Center. So had I not done that, it would have just, you know, there would have been a lot of disappointed people because they wouldn't have been able to get in. But it was a great turnout, and everything went lovely. Everything went lovely. So, yeah, I'm very pleased with that.
It was my first time attending your film festival, and I had a wonderful time. And my husband, he can't wait to return back to the Vineyard. It was his first time there, and it was the atmosphere was just wonderful.
Great.
You remind me of the spirit of the contradiction of fear, hope.
Uh-oh, okay.
Do you know why I would say that? Can you explain to the audience? Well, it's about communities working together.
Uh-huh.
And your film festival comes from that same type of spirit of trying to promote films within, within our own group.
Exactly.
You see, why are you doing this? What about your past?
Oh, okay. Well, that's an excellent question. Myself solely, you know, I kind of have that spirit, and I come. I wouldn't say I necessarily come from that background, but I do harbor that spirit. I try to have a good spirit and do for others, and I feel for other people. I can feel their pain, and the festival in itself can take on many different faces. In some respects, it is a film festival, but in many respects, it's a support group. So we are supporting the filmmakers, and we're supporting each other as well. And that's what it's all about. It's like everybody needs support. You know, you need support in what you're doing. And I'm so happy and pleased to hear you say that you acknowledge that. In our efforts, because that's what it is. It's a support group, and unfortunately, a lot of times, certain folks might not get that, but other folks do get that. They get the whole support thing, and they can be appreciative of that. So, you know, I salute those who do support it, and hopefully, for those who don't, they can catch up with me.
Well, the environment was one of support. It was one of love and unity. You had a set of volunteers that showed up because I was there early in the morning at the PAC at the high school, waiting to buy tickets. And you had a set of volunteers. They were all very polite. You had filmmakers. You also had a cruise for filmmakers to network. Am I right?
I did. I did have a cruise for we typically have I think this is possibly our fourth or fifth year on the boat cruise, and I'm not sure if you were on the boat or not, but typically what that is, it's called the Black Dog Tall Ship. So it's not the stereotypical boat cruise. It's, for lack of a better example, it's, you know, sort of kind of like a slave ship. That's a horrible analogy, so please forgive me, but it is one of those kind of ships, you know, with the big tall sail. With the spinning wheel, the helm, and everything you would think of. You know, it's one of those big wooden boats. It's a huge, huge boat. So it's not like a Circle Line or a cruise ship per se. It's a boat, a real ship with a real sail. So we take them out there. And there's supposed to be a lot of networking and camaraderie going on. Unfortunately, we had some inclement weather, but we did manage to go out and beat the inclement weather. I mean, once we docked, the rain came. So, but nonetheless, it was a good trip.
Now, your background. You said you have this spirit. Who do you think helped instill this spirit of philanthropy and community and all these wonderful things?
I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm philanthropic just yet. I mean, maybe I'm headed in that way, but I will say it is a spirit of support. My background, I was brought up a single mother, and she needed help. She needed support. So I was always in these kind of like support type of situations, support groups. And that possibly permeated my skin, and kind of grew from there. So I've always been kind of a supportive person, supportive of friends. But the truth of it is that I really didn't have a lot of support as a young man. I didn't have a lot of family members. I have one sibling who needs support and who didn't have a lot of support. So you mix that in with me being a filmmaker and a creator, and then somehow outputs me doing the film festival in conjunction with my wife, who's also a very giving and extremely generous person. Sometimes she's a little bit too generous for my taste.
Mm-hmm. I saw the two of you, and that's how we met. I didn't know who you were, but I did.
Now let me ask you: were you the one young lady with the camera?
Yes, and you corrected me, and you gave me instructions on how to. And that's when I said, "No one has ever took the time to teach me anything." But it was important because I'm 4'10", and you didn't like the picture. You said I was taking the picture and it was going up your nostrils.
Right. It was not flattering. I looked like Herman Munster, I think I said.
Right. And I instantly liked you because that is philanthropic in itself.
Yes, it is. You're right. And that, I honestly say that is what it's all about. It's about, you receive by giving. And that's kind of like at the essence of it. You know, by giving to people or giving to others, you receive. It may not come in the form that you want it to come in, but you'll get it back. So that's the whole essence behind it, for me at least, is that I know that, by giving people and giving to people, that I'll receive some good.
And I like I said, it was great. And your wife, you have a great team. How did you and your wife come up with this concept? And first of all, how did you two meet? Period. Let's start there.
Okay, we met. This seems like a long time ago. We met back in '90, I think it was, and we met. Short story. At a industry party. I think it was a Def Jam Christmas party. So we met, and the rest is history. We basically dated like most folks. And what happened was when we were dating, in the midst of dating, we dated for about 7 years before we got married. So in between those 7 years, she introduced me to Martha's Vineyard. So we would go up there, and typically for most young men, it doesn't really resonate with them. They don't really get it. I mean, Martha's Vineyard is an interesting place in of itself. It's very... It's just I call it its own planet, honestly. It's like it just takes you a minute to get adjusted to it and to figure it out. So she introduced me to it, and we would go up there maybe like once a year. We would go up there and date, maybe spend a couple of days, possibly a week. And then what happened is as our careers advanced, she became an event planner for a spirits company, Martel Cognac. And she did an event in Martha's Vineyard, basically a party, pouring opportunity for 3 nights. And we had some filmmakers come, and they showed their films at the theater in Oak Bluffs. And the line was around the corner. So she, the light bulb went off in her head, and she decided that she was going to do a film festival. And I was behind her 100% and said, go for it. You can do it. Then I supported her in her effort, and then eventually, me having a film background, it was just perfect that we, merge our talents together and move forward with the idea.
Wonderful.
So that's a short story.
Mm-hmm. That's a short story. There are several other film festivals. What makes your festival different than the other ones? And give me three that you admire, and besides attending yours, that you would think other people would like to, or should go to?
Sure. The one thing about it is that what people need to understand if they're not familiar is that there are a myriad of film festivals. From African-American to, gay, female, you name it. There's a different genre,
Italian,
different category for film festivals. So that's one thing they need to know. The other thing they need to know is that there's a gazillion, literally a gazillion film festivals. Every state has, you know, who knows, an innumerable amount of film festivals. And the other thing you need to know is that they come and go. I mean, some can last forever or for a really long time, and some kind of, you know, pop up like weeds and then they disappear. So you're going to get, you know, some are going to be good and some are going to be not so good. And it's not easy to do. I mean, it's for the most part predicated upon sponsorship. But then again, there's also different shapes and sizes of them as well. I mean, you don't have to have everything that I have. That's just what we do. And we try not to compare ourselves to other ones. Mm-hmm. But to answer the part of your question, some people might recommend Sundance. But again, it really just depends on what your taste is. Now, you attended as an attendee. So mm-hmm. you're an African-American female. I would say you were in the right spot. You were at the right spot. There were people from all over the country. I don't know if you had a chance to speak to some of them, but people come from as far as California, Colorado, and all up and down the Eastern Seaboard, Chicago. They come from all over to mm-hmm. be there that week and to attend the film festival. There's Urban World in New York City, which takes place, I think that's in September. I haven't been recently, but, I mean, you know, if you're in the area, you can check it out. But just alone, New York City probably has, I don't know, maybe 20 film festivals, if not more. There's a lot of film festivals. There's ABFF in Miami. That might not be for everybody, though, because it's just a different clientele, definitely different than the clientele in Martha's Vineyard that you saw. It skews a little younger, and it's just different. It's easier to get to Miami than it is to get to Martha's Vineyard. So it's a little different, but nonetheless, you might still want to go as an attendee. So I would recommend, you know, just trying to check things out, you know, pack light, and just try to do a little research before you go to any film festival. To see what's going on, especially because you want to be able to do other things as well. You don't want to just be tied to the festival. You want to be able to experience some of the surroundings as well. You know, you can get more bang for your buck.
Right, and you've been doing this for 10 years, correct?
Yes, this was our 10th year, and we're very proud of that.
And I'm truly impressed with 10 years, like you said. You're in market that's full of other film festivals, and to last this long says a lot about your character. Now, there's other films that came out of your film festival besides The Contradiction of Fair Hope. Can you give us a list of other ones that that you're very proud to say you helped promote at its infancy?
Sure, absolutely. And I don't have the brochure in front of me, but I'll give it my best shot. Now there's three we typically have three genres. We have shorts, which typically can be as short as 5 minutes or 30 minutes. And on Saturday, I don't know if you attended, we had the HBO short film competition. That was Saturday evening. And the five films in that category were excellent. I think it was Curveball, The Tombs, my mind. Oh, Junior was a fan favorite as well. So those are some of the short films that were really good. There was also I Can Smoke, which was an interesting piece, and there was a few other interesting short films that screened as well. I think Octavia Spencer, the Academy Award winner for Best Actress in The Help, had a film there narrated by Viola Davis, who was also nominated for the Academy Award. Her film, I don't remember her film, but I know it was about bullying, and it was kind of semi-autobiographical about Barack Obama and his experiences as a child. There was another film called Bully that was very good. It was also about bullying. And there was a film by a youngster, a young child who's 9 years old. She's trying to help her brother get this commemorative stamp about this gentleman by the name of York. And he was with the two men who are credited with, and this has escaped me as well, they're credited with discovering, what's the story of Sacagawea?
Oh, okay. They were like, Frontiersmen?
Explorers, the two explorers.
Okay. Okay, you're talking about Daniel Boone?
No, it's in that period. But nonetheless,
it's called
Chasing York. You can Google that. It's called Chasing York, mm-hmm. and he's trying to get a commemorative stamp for this African American gentleman who helped these two explorers unbeknownst to the world. He was kind of like their point person, but he's not credited in any of the history books or anything. So his first name is York, and their mission, and the boy is only 12, his sister's 9. His mission is to get this commemorative stamp with this gentleman York on the cover. So that's a very honorable thing for him to do. So that's the short category. We had a good piece on why do you have black dolls? That was a very interesting piece, and it was one of my favorites was the Gantilist, which was about this guy named Jerry. I think his name is Jerry Gant, and he's an artist in Newark, New Jersey. That was one of my favorite pieces. So there was a lot of a great shorts, and you'd really have to, be a fan of African American art and artifacts, and also history, and it helps to be that way. Now, in the feature categories, it was a phenomenal film called Wolf. By a gentleman by the name of Yake Smith, and he's a professor at University of Texas. And it was about this child. It was a narrative film, and it was about sexual molestation. But really it's about a relationship between this man who's a preacher or minister and this boy who he has been kind of like ministering. And it's told through the story of the eyes of the child. And when I say child, he's probably a preteen, maybe a teen. And basically the young man falls in love with the minister, and the minister breaks it off with the boy. And we see the family kind of like fall apart. So the thing about that film that was really great was that it was done very tastefully. It wasn't a shock and awe movie, and it wasn't too unsettling. I mean, he told the truth. And unfortunately, these things do still go on. He did use the church as his paradigm, but it happens all over. I mean, just recently, with Jerry Sandusky, and there was some other guy up in Syracuse. And, I mean, the list is endless. So it was an excellent film. It was definitely an award winner. It won the Producers Award. It was a great film. The Last Fall was an excellent film as well. That was about a football player who, unbeknownst to the world, is not making the money that we might think he's making. He's basically a journeyman, and he goes broke. He's basically broke, and he has to start all over again and figure things out for himself. And there was an excellent movie called Alaska Land by a Nigerian woman about the Nigerians. Nigerian, just a narrative as well, about the Nigerian experience in Alaska, this one particular family, their experience in Alaska. And what basically sort of kind of like a fish out of water story, but it's a coming of age story about Nigerians living in Africa. So that was an excellent movie as well. And this year we received like just excellent features, excellent documentaries, and excellent short films. I mean, it was a really, really great lineup. In the documentary section, you mentioned The Contradictions of Fairhope, which was the HBO documentary winner. Then there was the Vasali 73 American Runway Revolution. That was also that won the CNN Documentary Award. That was a great documentary as well. There was the A&T Uprising, I think it was called Walls That Bleed, and that was a very interesting documentary. And there was one more, possibly two more that escaped me right now. I don't have the brochure in front of me. But all in all, we had about 60-plus films.
Only had 25.
No, it was like 60-plus, and that's way more than we want to have. We want to have it down to like 40, maybe 35, and we're going to work on some of that next year, just not to have so much content, just to make things a little different. We're going to work on some things differently for next year, and to pare things down. The event crescendo.
What's happening?
What,
why did
you
have so
happened?
Many submissions?
Oh,
you
we
know,
got
yes.
some great, we got great publicity going into it. So we received the most submissions we've ever received. And plus it was the 10th year. And sometimes things come together like that. I mean, sometimes, you know, the sun, the moon, the stars, they all align and you get a lot of submissions.
I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I met a few people that knew about it. Couldn't wait to attend. And and it's great. So you want to pare it down next year. Do you think about, have you thought about having a satellite off the Martha's Vineyard?
Well, visual or audio?
Venue.
No, visual satellite? You mean like you mean a satellite event. Yes, we have thought about that. I'm glad you brought that up. We're trying to work on that for 2013. We're trying to do something for 2013, and that would possibly be in the Charlotte area for those folks that can't make it to Martha's Vineyard because it can be a little pricey and a little costly. And also it's a bit arduous to get to. We were going to have it in the Charlotte area. So we're working on that now. We're definitely working on that now. I'm glad you asked about that.
Yeah, because I was thinking the sister to Martha's Vineyard may be, in my estimation, is the Gullah Island.
Okay.
Which is very
I haven't been there, but that's a beautiful place. I'd love to be there. The Gullah Islands is probably, you're right, it's probably very similar. Well, again, that, and I'm glad you brought that up too.
Are you there? All right, I think we lost our friend, Floyd Rance. Hopefully he'll call back. He's talking about the Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival, and we're discussing maybe having a satellite venue in South Carolina in the Gullah area. So let's wait for Mr. Rance to call back. And until he calls back, I'm going to play just a little music.
The most militant opponent of Booker T. Washington's philosophy of accommodation.
Okay, we have you back on the line. Thanks so much. Now, we were talking about the Gullah Island.
Right. What I was saying was, and I do apologize for that, the Gullah Island is similar to Martha's Vineyard in that it is a unique place, and it is it's kind of, again, like its own planet. And I'm sure there's parts of, I mean, the Gullah Islands has so much more history. I mean, my God, I'm blown away by all the history that the Gullah Islands have, but that's even more unique than Martha's Vineyard. So you're right. You're absolutely right. It would be related to Martha's Vineyard in its uniqueness, but I definitely wouldn't want to tackle the Gullah Islands. I mean, that's just such a rich place in African American history. I wouldn't want to spoil it in that regard. I mean, it's so untouched. You know, I mean, I know they have tourism, but I wouldn't want to be, you know, I wouldn't want to spoil it like that. I mean, we considered Charleston, though. Charleston's a nice venue. But to start, we may just do it in Charlotte, you know, just to keep it simple for those folks who need, you know, a little simpler simplicity at the event. We may just do it in Charlotte.
And we were talking about events. You said there was a lot to do, and that's how you should decide which film festival to attend.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the Harlem Arts Fair going on around the same time
as
your
the
film
Harlem,
festival?
It's called the Harlem Fine Arts Show, and this was their first year there. And we did chat before the event, so I did know that they were going to be there. And it was kind of like a testing year. We were trying to find out, you know, just trying to create some type of synergy between the two events. He, or they, I should say, ran into some complications. Again, Martha's Vineyard is an island unto it's a planet unto itself. So you really have to take some time to get to know the people and to figure out how the politics work and how things work. But all in all, I mean, they got it off the ground and they did good, and they actually complimented us really well. So we'll take some time off, and then we'll probably put our heads together and see what we're going to do for next year. And we also talked about bringing them down here in Charlotte, but that entity is an entity unto itself. He's going to be doing his thing in February at I think it's at the church in Harlem, the Riverside Church, if I'm not mistaken, in Harlem. And he tours, they tour as well. But that was a nice component and a nice compliment as well.
Yeah, I would think so. And mm-hmm. You mentioned a few sponsors. Give us a list of the sponsors and tell us, how did you guys make the connection and how long have you been working together?
Okay, well, that's a great question. Macy's came about by just basically reaching out to them. And sponsorship works, one of the ways sponsorships works is just by making a connection. I mean, there's no secrets. There's no secrets. I mean, it's all in who you know. And it's all in who you get on the phone sometimes. So that was just reaching out to Macy's, and we were blessed to, you know, be connected with someone who could appreciate what we were doing. And they've been on board, I think it's been 3 years. This was their third year, and we're really, really happy and proud to have them on board. They subsequently brought on Lacoste. Lacoste, this was their second year on board. So Lacoste and Macy's are kind of like the co-presenting sponsors of the film festival. HBO has been on board for the past, I want to say, about seven years. And they are the award sponsor. They sponsor the awards. At the end of, on Saturday night, we had the short film competition, and then the awards follow after that. And we're trying to do other things with them as well. Saatchi & Saatchi, which is our advertising component, and that's the one component that really sets us apart from all the other African American festivals, is the advertising component. And although you don't see it, they do a lot of work with the filmmakers off island and off, you know, during the off season. They work with the group of filmmakers that they selected. They bring them to their facility in New York City, and they do screenings there. And they're trying to, you know, bring more African Americans into commercial production, because there's a huge void of African Americans behind the cameras in commercial production. So they've taken on this diversity initiative to bring, you know, introduce talent, undiscovered talent, into the advertising world. So that's huge. They should be applauded for that. And let's see, I hope I'm not forgetting anyone else. So I said Lacoste, Macy's, HBO, Saatchi & Saatchi. I think that's it. I mean, we have local bank sponsor, CSC, which has been with us, was a camera service center located in New Jersey. Those are associates of mine as well. They've been with us. They've been great supporters for the past, I don't know, 8-10 years. They've been with us about 8 years at least. So it's really, as I said, who you know, and it's about relationships and making relationships and fostering relationships. And again, it's just something that I like to do. I love meeting people, being nice to people, and trying to make some type of connection and getting them on board. And we hope to have other, you know, other sponsors on board in the future.
Wonderful. And you had
there's one more. I knew I forgot somebody.
Okay.
CNN. they sponsored an award. This was their third year or their fourth year, and they came on board. Again, these things don't happen. Some of them are easy, and some of them are not so easy. and some come on board maybe 1 year, 2 years, and then their initiatives may change. But CNN has been on board faithfully and supportively for the past, I want to say, 4 or 5 years, and they basically were introduced to us via HBO, but we had been pursuing them prior to the introduction as well. So sometimes when you get that stone rolling down the hill, it's going to gather moss. So that's the way of looking at that.
Well, you have a great attitude, and it's nice of you to share all of these stories with our audience, because you don't know who you are encouraging to also get in this this genre.
Well, you know, that's what it is, Leslie. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. There's no secrets. You know, I don't have any secrets, you know. I mean, by all means. That's interesting that you said that as well. You're like, you don't know who you're encouraging. If you notice, there were several events going on in Martha's Vineyard during that week. And all that activity was created by my event. It wasn't there 10 years ago. So there was a jazz festival that was going on. That's been going on for 3 years. The Harlem Fine Arts Show, they were specifically there because we were there. So, you know, we attracted them. There have been other events that have kind of like been born as a result mm-hmm. of our success there. So when you're having success doing something, you're going to have people who are going to, you know, want to be successful as well, want to get on board, or want to, you know, it's going to inspire them to do something as well. And that's, again, that's what it's all about. You want to be able to inspire people and get them going
right.
as well, you know, and that's the way I see it. So there's a plethora of other events that have been inspired by our film festival, and they take place right there in the venue, and that works for you, and it works against you as well, because they're cutting into your marketplace. But that's just the way the business goes. I mean, you got to roll with the punches.
Wow, I didn't look at it that way, but I could see that being, yeah, that, you know, you can't spread your money too thinly. And if you're being, yeah, you're right, on your way to the film festival, you may see 4 or 5 other things that may take some of your money away. So I think
if they're going to be there, I mean, if you're doing well and mm-hmm. they know you're doing well, then for sure somebody's going to try to come and, you know, piggyback is what we call it. They're going to try to piggyback on your success. If you're not, it just lets you know you're doing well. That's all. If you're not doing well, then they're like, oh, I'm not going to mess with that. But if you're doing well, then for sure enough, they're going to park their car next to yours and try to sell some stuff too. That's just the way it goes.
Now, technology, is there a way that you can, I bought my all-day pass on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that you can block that from happening by advertising and making sure that, you know, your attendees pay up front before, you know, the predators get a hold of them?
You call them predators.
And I'm just saying, you know, just to
no,
get to
I
the
understand.
Point quickly. We they're not predators. They're baby ranchers.
Competitive. They're competitive. No, I mean, you know, it's not something that we really are concerned about per se.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent, you want to be able to keep it all in one. You know, you want to be able to have your own kind of like property, kind of like Disneyland, where you own
mm-hmm.
everything. You have the whole thing to yourself. But on the other hand, it's not the case. I don't own Martha's Vineyard, and I don't own a big piece of land where I can kind of section it off for myself. So you just have to deal with it. It's just competition. You just have to, be better. You just have to keep trying to make your event better, make it better. You know, in addition to having competitors out there who are kind of siphoning from your event, you have to try to make it fresh every year, you know, and that,
mm-hmm.
so that makes it even harder for you. So, it's making it harder on them as well, you know. But see, we have our fans, and then maybe they have fans, but they're definitely trying to not woo all your fans, but if they can woo some of them, they're just trying to give them an alternative. You know, that's what
uh-huh.
they're trying to do. Like, so again, it's like if you're making a dollar over here, then they see you making a dollar over there. sure enough, and you're selling, let's say you're selling T-shirts on this corner, and you got a long line, sure enough, someone's going to come on the other corner and start selling the same thing or something similar. Just
right.
Just because you got a long line. And that's just business. That's just what's going to happen.
That is so true. Now, on a little lighter note, Rashad Robinson.
Right.
Tell our audience who he is and why is he so special. And
okay, now, the deal with Rashad, and I'm new to Rashad as well. From what I understand, he is the head of an organization called Color of Change, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And he has a very long list of accomplishments and achievements. So if you need to know more about Mr. Rashad Robinson, you know, please look him up online and Google him, and I'm sure you will be impressed by his dossier. Unfortunately, I can't go on about Mr. Robinson because that was my first time meeting him that evening. But I was prepped on him being a very accomplished young man, or man, I should say, not a young man. But.
Did he come? Who recommended that he would host the Contradiction of Fear screening?
What happened was there was a young woman by the name of Crystal. And her last name escapes me, but she did an event, a philanthropic event. She had a philanthropic summit earlier in the week. Like I think that event went from Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Well, she reached out to us as well and wanted to partner. She wanted to co-partner something. And I think Mr. Robinson was at her event. So prior to the event, we put our heads together and said, okay, well, we'll do this, which was the Contradiction of Fair Hope, here at the venue where it was. So we just partnered. We just got together and partnered, and kind of like minds thing, and that's how the whole thing came together. Yeah.
And that gentleman's name, I think the audience should look him up because he's an activist online, and he influenced a lot of political changes through petitions online. His name is Rashad Robinson, and it's thecolorofchange.org. And he was with the group. I think I met Crystal. I'm not sure. I don't want to say that over on the Internet. But I met someone who was covering on that philanthropic summit. And the website that she gave me is blackgivesback.com or .org.
Okay.
Blackgivesback. So, you attracted, we talked earlier about the negative attractions of people that are coming, trying to siphon your talent.
I just want to clarify, I wouldn't call it negative. I would just say par for the course. I mean, that's just life. That's just business. I mean,
that's part of the curve. There's a curve.
Yeah, that's just what it is, what it is. Right.
And where we're going right now is to say how you attracted someone from such an elite organization with Black Gives Back. You know,
well, again, like I said earlier, it's like when you're doing something well, you're gonna get both. When you're doing something well, you're gonna get negative, and then you're gonna get positive. So you have to just try to be weary of who you partner with. So we've had people who've tried to partner with us who were negative. They were, you know, self-centered, egotistical, and just very ungrateful. And that, again, that's just a part of business. It's part of life, really, is that you're going to run into people who, you know, don't appreciate what you're doing, and they're out for themselves, and they're really just trying to, you know, make some money where there really isn't any money for them to make. You know, that's their whole objective. Is just to, again, they're just trying to piggyback off your success. They're not trying to pitch in like she did. See, she pitched in. She said, well, okay, hey, I got this venue. What can we do together? You know, I'm going to be here anyway. What can we do together? So it's like, oh, okay, well, we're a little weary of partnering with people, but let's give it a shot and see what we can do together. And fortunately, she was a woman of her word, and that came through. So she brought this to the table. Well, hey, I have Rashad Robinson is going to be here, and he's going to moderate this event, right? So, okay, well, that's something on the table. That's something we can work with, and we got this. We're going to bring that, and we'll put our two coins together, and we'll make this happen, right? And it was very successful, as you could see. It was a nice event. Well, on the other hand, you might have someone who's maybe self-centered, and they want it to be all about them, and you're going to work with them, and then in the long run, they're going to do you dirty. But that, again, is just a part of business, unfortunately. That's just how it goes.
And I'm glad that you didn't let any of them get the best of you, and that you're still here. And
oh,
you're
thank you.
Talking about expanding. And I'm so pleased to have met you, and I thought it was divine intervention that Rashad was there working around, you know, on the same type of subject as Contradiction of Fair Hope. I think it was a great coincidence that he's part of a philanthropic group, and
right.
The film was about, you know, philanthropy at a stage back when we really didn't have any money.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
You know, so, you know, most people say that right now we're the most selfish people and we don't look out for one another. Mm-hmm. And between the film and the actual people that were attending your event and what you're doing, it is a contradiction in itself to what the media is portraying, how the media is portraying us as being selfish and self-centered. But here we have three different genres that meant. Oh, yeah,
that's great.
I was feeling you guys. I was just like, you know, this needs to be shared. These types of events need to be televised.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you, Leslie. I mean, I am, right next to you, side by side, and I'm 100% in agreement with you. And we're working towards trying to do that. You know, things take time. They don't happen overnight. You just have to be persistent.
And when I say philanthropic, I don't mean financially.
I mean your
time, your talent,
right,
your energy.
You. Yeah,
you know, anybody can write a check, especially if it's money that they didn't earn, if it's inheritance. Anybody can write a check to a charitable organization and get a write-off. But when you are, like you and your wife are doing all that work, I saw you with my own eyes running around, as event planners do, You put a lot of passion in that, and I'm just pleased to say that I saw firsthand, and I hope it catches on, in all different states, that they have something similar to what you guys are doing, because we need it, and you know we have Magic Johnson's Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about, you know, how do you feel about having mainly one black theater nationally?
Say that again. You said, how do I feel about having
Yeah, how do you feel about the lack of venues?
Oh, the
for
lack of venues.
American films to be showcased.
Okay, I'm missing. You said Magic Johnson
Theater. We only have, he's the only theater that I know about. Besides, you know, we had Madam C.J. Walker. She owned a theater.
Oh, did she? Okay.
We don't have our own theaters in our communities.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, you know, that's on the list, but that's not
mm-hmm.
high on the list. I mean, there's so many
mm-hmm.
other things to be concerned about, and unfortunately, but then again, it's not unfortunate because he is there and he does own them. Now, I'm very impressed by Magic Johnson. He's definitely on my
mm-hmm.
role model list,
mm-hmm.
but. You know, and I read his book. I read his 32 Business Ways book, and it was excellent. It was phenomenal. So it's a blessing that he does have those theaters.
Uh-huh.
And it's not necessarily a negative that.
No, I think it's a great
business,
thing.
The theater
I'm just
business
we don't have
not,
enough of them.
No,
we
don't
have enough Magic Johnsons.
No, I understand. But what I'm saying is that the theater business is not an easy business to be in. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's not what it used to be. I mean, there's a lot of overhead. I mean, right now in this era, we're looking at all the theater chains, and by now, for example, I'll give you for example, in Martha's Vineyard, there was two theaters in Oak Bluffs where you were, right?
Okay.
And those are where the Performing Arts Center is. There's two theaters downtown, and those theaters are decrepit. They're pretty almost almost abandoned almost, but they do have an owner. Well, the thing is that now in this day and age, in 2012, all the theaters are going digital. So you have to turn, they have to go from projecting film to projecting a digital signal. So that's a big overhaul. You're looking at maybe $100,000, if not more, to change your whole system over. So that's an expense that you, as a theater owner, have to have. You have to make that happen. Now, Magic can afford that, but can you imagine if you owned all these theaters and you have to turn over because the studios are no longer giving you those films on the system that you have. So just to put it in layman's terms, you have a VHS system. They're going to give you their stuff on a hard drive. So you can't even show the movies anymore because you got the VHS. There's nothing on VHS anymore. So you know you have to spend $100,000 to be able to keep up with technology and be able to stay in business. A lot of if you were just a sole owner in a community that's struggling or whatever, then you're going to be hard pressed. So it's a blessing and it's a curse at the same time because you don't want some guy or a family or whatever who has maybe four or five theaters and they show movies as well. They can't make this transition, right? Yeah. They got to go under unless they have other things. They rent the space out for other things. So it's not it's really not an easy business to be in. So Magic should be commended and applauded for all his efforts in terms of owning the theaters. And he has friends and peers on his financial level as well, and I'm sure they've looked into it. And who knows? He might be telling them, "No, you don't want to mess with this over here. You might want to get into the franchise business."
I'm a big admirer of Magic. I didn't want you to misunderstand my question.
I did
point that we don't have enough films.
We don't have enough films or spaces, and that's what you're saying.
Right.
We don't have enough spaces, enough venues in our communities to do something like this or other things. We have a lot of stage shows and plays and things of that nature. I mean, again,
can they double?
Say again?
Can a theater house double as a film?
Oh, absolutely.
Venue?
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So we talked about the logistics, and I got, I think, the listeners. We're all receiving a crash course on film festivals and, in modern times. And I think this is something that a lot of young people should listen to. Have you done presentations? Do you teach, how far have you gone with sharing your knowledge with with this backdrop information?
I guess I'm at the beginning of that journey as well. I mean, I haven't even begun to share as much info as I'd like to share, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just around the corner where I can start, espousing that information as well.
Well, what you just explained to me about the different transitions that are going on as far as technology is important. And
it's very important. It's, a lot of people might not know that. I mean, in the other town, where we were with the Contradiction of Fair Hope, there was a theater around the corner, not directly around the corner, but down the street and around the corner on the main street. And they're in that same predicament. They have to change over to digital projection. They have to be able to receive hard drives and be able to screen their films on hard drive because they're still projecting cellular. Reel to reel. They're still projecting reel to reel. But as I said, the studios are no longer distributing films on reel to reels. This is it. This is the end of the line. So if you don't convert over, then that's it. You're just out of luck. You're going to have to do something else. You're not going to be a movie house anymore. So that's a predicament for all the independent owners out there. All these independent owners like the gentleman in Oak Bluff, he's in that predicament. He's going to have to find some money, get a loan or something to get this $100,000 new system to put into his dilapidated movie house. It's probably not worth it for him to do that. And then in a place like Martha's Vineyard, you only have 6 months to really make substantial profit, if any, because they're you know, in the winter months, they're, you know, non-existent. Their number one resource is gone, which is tourism. So in the black community, bringing it back to the black community, wherever they are in America, it's kind of like the similar predicament. You know, if you take that movie house and put it in, you name the black community, that person would be in a similar, that independent theater owner would be in a similar predicament, whereas a stream of income would be shut off because now they can't do that anymore.
Wow. Okay. And last questions I have is about something you mentioned much earlier in our conversation, the admissions. What are the requirements of a filmmaker?
Okay, that's a fair question. Well, the requirements, essentially the way the process works is you go to the website, which is mvaaff.com, and you download the submission form. And then there'll be a list of questions on the submission forms, and you fill that out, and then you submit it in with your submission fee. It's a nominal fee. It's probably a lot less expensive than some of the other well-known film festivals out there. So you send that in, and we receive that. And then after we view it once, then we view it again, and then if necessary, we might view it a third time to see if this can fit in the programming that we are, you know, going with. So it depends, again, on the genre, if it's a feature, short, or a short film, or a documentary. And then that's where it gets really, really critical in terms of, because art, as you know, is subjective. Art is subjective. So, for example, I might love it. Somebody else, another judge, might say they don't like it. And then we have to make a determination whether we're going to go. But you, as a viewer, as an attendee, you might love it, right? So,
right.
You know, that's always a kind of like a sticky situation. So if, you know, you saw, it seemed like everybody loved Contradiction and Fair Hopes, and that's a good thing. So that means that's easy. But there may have been another film where some people were like, well, it was okay. And another person might be like, oh, I loved it, you know. So that's just how art is. So it can be It can be kind of a dicey situation. Some of the films we receive are no brainers. Some of them are not accepted because of whatever criteria. It could be the content. It could be it lacks.
What about profanity?
Typically never profanity. That's typically not the case. Sometimes there is sexual content that's inappropriate, and I have turned away some things possibly because maybe it was a little bit too risque. I try to. It's a very liberal. We're very liberal in the programming. That's one thing that we definitely are, very liberal. We don't, you know, we don't look down upon, you know, anything. It's really in terms of just technically, like, has it been done? You know, is there passion behind your efforts? You know, and then it boils down to, well, are you a first timer? You know, what is your pedigree? Where do you come from? Like, what, you know, what has brought you to this point? So there's a lot that goes into.
So is this a formal interview? Do you formally interview your filmmakers?
No. I'm just basing it off of the visual content.
Okay.
I'm basing it off the visual. Like, I can look at, I'll give you an example. I can look at Contradiction of Fair Hope, and I can determine, based on this, just by looking at it, the technical expertise of the person behind the camera. And I can look at it and tell how much research was done, the editing, how they put it together, the cinematography, the storyline, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the criteria that we're basing it on.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, I think you're ready to move on into the classroom or lecture hall. Because you're ready. I mean, that sounds like a syllabus to me, at least.
Oh, well, thank you, Leslie. I appreciate it. And like I said, maybe that's right around the corner.
Yes. Well, I enjoyed talking to you. I had a great time meeting you. I look forward to working with you, attending your events. I want to promote them. I told you that when I first met you. And next time I want you to bring your wife on as well.
All right, sure.
You guys are a wonderful team. And let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Now, can you send me a link to this?
Yes. Again, I will tell you in the audience, and I'll send it to you.
www.blackhistorydocumentaries.com.
And you can also find us at www.leslieGIST.com, spelled anyway, Leslie, LESLIERLESLEY. Have them all. So, wait, I will send you the link, and make sure you get out and vote. You know, the RNC is starting tomorrow, the conventions, and we're trying to promote voting, and we're going to be covering the DNC and the RNC live with Gloria Brown Marshall, who is a constitutional law professor. So I want everyone to know. Yes,
she's going to be here in Charlotte.
Yes, North. Yes, she is. She's going to be down there, and I'll send you her herself. You don't mind if I send her yours, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to say hello. We were trying to volunteer, but it's really it's not as easy as I would have hoped it to be. But as you can only imagine, there's probably tons of folks trying to volunteer.
Well, I will give you her number, and we'll make some, if we can, we'll see if we can make something happen, because here we go again. This is what it's all about, supporting and networking. And,
that's it.
You know, what is the likelihood that she would be in North Carolina? Whatever. We'll figure it all out once we get together. All right. Thanks again, Floyd, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, Leslie.